This is Encounters, a dialogue that brings you multifaceted life stories you don't want to miss.
By being a fan, you just need to know that whether I enjoyed it or not, right? You don't need to dig out the why. But a film critic has to tell you the why. If a film critic said, oh, this is absolutely the best movie of the year, or the lousiest movie of the year, and leaving at that, I said, you are not a critic. You have to say, oh, this is good. Why? I hate this movie. Why? It's in the whys where a critic can be taken seriously and can be measured. There are so many movies worth seeing out there. Try something that you thought you would not like. Maybe you'll like it. If you tried it and still don't like it, it's okay, it's not for you. If something's not for you, it does not automatically mean it's not good. We all have our likes and dislikes. Good and bad, there are different things. Good and bad, usually you have to require arbiters of aesthetics. It's not determined by one person or one group. It's determined by a so-called consensus. Consensus is built on a good foundation of knowledge and experience. I want to contribute to the film industry, not just the Chinese industry, but you know, all over the world, by offering what I have, which is a multiple viewpoints, multiple perspectives in seeing things. If you offer something that can be valued by your target audience, then you have a value.
Hello and welcome to Encounters. I'm your host, Man Ling. In today's program, I continue our conversation with Raymond Zhou, a veteran film critic who over almost 20 years has gained a great reputation among Chinese moviegoers for his casual and direct style. In recent years, his craft has faced a growing challenge from amateur critics on social media. The voices of professionals are increasingly being drowned out by anyone with an opinion and an internet connection. In this episode, Raymond and I discuss the roles and responsibilities of film critics. We also talk about how the profession has changed over the years and look to its future in a rapidly moving world driven by new technology. Stay tuned for more. What is the difference for a moviegoer to watch a movie and for a critic like you? What are the difference? When you were watching a movie, you are a fan or a critic?
Oh, both a fan and a critic. And I think by being a fan, you just need to know that whether I enjoyed it or not, right? You don't need to dig out the why. But a film critic has to tell you the why. If a film critic said, oh, this is absolutely the best movie of the year.
Why?
Or the lousiest movie of the year. And leaving at that, I said, you are not a critic. You have to say, oh, this is good. Why?
Yes.
I hate this movie. Why?
It's my opinion.
Yeah, it's in the whys where a critic can be taken seriously and can be measured. A critic is also measured by others. And when a critic is valued by a lot of people, it's in the whys. It's like I can write a review that contains opinions that are opposite to yours, but you will feel that the explanations I give is still valuable to you because it shows you there's another approach to this movie, which is in terms of disposition or artistic temperament is totally different from yours. But you know, oh, there are people out there who will see the movie this way instead of that way, then I have achieved my goal. But if I just say, oh, this movie is terrible, but you think this movie is great, I only give you the conclusion without the middle part, then I have failed. I cannot be called a critic at all.
Why is it important for moviegoers to read reviews?
Because
I'm a movie fan, right? A moviegoer. Why should I read reviews? I mean, I go and watch. And
you use it as a consumer guide.
Ah, okay. We have so many movies out there. Yeah. Which one to pick?
Yeah. And if time is not important to you, if the money of a ticket is not important to you, it doesn't matter, right?
Well, life is short.
But if you say, oh, I wasted 2 hours in the 50 kwai or the 100 kwai I spent on the ticket, then I would say, just spend 10 minutes in advance and read some reviews online and read different reviews, opposing views. Make up your own decision. Unless you always agree with one specific critic, which is almost impossible, right?
Then nowadays, it's impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah. But I said you read different reviews. And there are people who would say, oh, as long as the movie has this style in it, I will love it. That's one guide for you, right? But for a lot of people, rational consumers, you come to me and say, oh, please recommend a movie. I will ask back. I said, tell me 3 movies that you really like. Mm. Because there are so many movies worth seeing out there. I have to know your taste. And I will recommend something along that taste. But I would also recommend that you gradually broaden your horizon. Try something that you thought you would not like. Maybe you'll like it. If you tried it and still don't like it, it's okay. It's not for you. If something's not for you, it does not automatically mean it's not good. Those are 2 different concepts,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We all have our likes and dislikes.
Mm-hmm.
Good and bad, they are different things. Good and bad, usually you have to require arbiters of aesthetics. It's not determined by one person or one group. It's determined by a so-called consensus. Consensus is built on a good foundation of knowledge and experience.
Yes, indeed. That means the brand name of a critic is so important.
If you want to be a top critic, it is.
Because I'm a busy person. I would usually save the articles. I would watch the movie first. I call it raw watch because I do not want to be influenced by you guys.
Yes.
Your angles are your angles,
yes.
My angles. But I would watch it and then try to read these wonderful articles. And usually they gave me enlightenment. There are aspects that I didn't notice, that I didn't pay attention to, or I was not conscious of. And then after reading the good articles, I would say, oh my God, okay. Then you can watch the movie a second time.
Mm-hmm. I do the same thing.
You do the same thing as a critic?
Yeah, I definitely want to read good reviews. And I will save the reviews and then watch the movie. And if I watch the movie at the earliest possible time,
mm-hmm.
I will write my reviews and then read their reviews. If I don't do that, if there's already a bunch of reviews coming out.
You save them.
No, I read their reviews before I write mine.
Uh-huh.
If I found reviews that correspond to my own opinions and written beautifully, I will not write my reviews.
You don't want to repeat.
Right? I don't want to repeat what others said. Yeah. If I have something to say that they have, like, a dozen of the best reviewers have already written about this, but they have not touched upon this point, then I will write mine.
Okay, in some other media coverage, you mentioned that it's important for a film critic to pass on to works that you think or you value, you think are the masterpieces, to the masses. Why it's important for the masses to also be accessible to good movies? Why it's important to you?
Well, there are different mechanisms to evaluate movies and to pick the good ones. Say, all the awards and prizes, the annual ones, right? Every country has a ton of them. But somehow, there are always good movies that kind of slipped through the cracks. In Chinese, called the yizhu.
Lost gemstones.
Yeah, lost gems. And I specifically made a study of the Hollywood movies that became yizhu. And I found out that 1/3 of the masterpieces would be recognized at the end of the year by the Academy Awards. And the 2/3 of them would be recognized by being nominated. But the last 1/3 of them would not even be nominated. But gradually, a few years later, or even like decades later, people become suddenly aware or gradually aware that those were the lost gemstones. And it's the people who are the guardians of good taste. It sounds
guardians, such a good word. No, I love it.
But it definitely sounds elitist.
You're self-conscious.
But you submit them to new evaluations.
Uh-huh.
For the past 5 years, I've been helping BBC Culture selecting their top 100 movies. They have many lists, like the top 100 non-English movies, the top 100 movies from the 21st century, top 100 movies from women directors. And those came much later than the year of the creation, the movies were released. So for the Lost Gems, that was a good chance. And if enough people started recognizing those movies, they resurface to not public consciousness, but to the consciousness of the cineasts.
They should not be lost, right?
They should not have been lost in the first place.
Yeah, indeed.
But no awards or mechanisms are perfect. So there's always this readjusting, reevaluation. There are movies that got great awards, but on second look, 10 years later, they were not so good. They were mediocre, uh-huh. Right?
Can you name a few Lost Gem movies that you think people should not miss?
Well, definitely Mulholland Drive is one. Mulholland
really?
Drive is from the year 2000, mm-hmm. and I thought it was a revolutionary work, a landmark, a true landmark by David Lynch.
Okay.
And it was very difficult to understand, quite inaccessible. So the first time I just watched it from a movie theater, I came back home and I wrote 3 pieces of articles on that.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought I got the gist. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, it was not even nominated, and which was quite strange. But this movie became number one on the BBC list for great movies of the 21st century.
Wow. Okay.
And so it means by a huge margin, of course, from the perspective of mostly film critics.
If it's forgotten, right? It's very unfortunate, right? What about Chinese movies? Do you think we have neglected some of the really master good pieces?
Well, one of the greatest movies from history is 小城之春, Spring in a Small Town, mm-hmm. from 1948. It didn't get any award. It didn't get any box office. Uh-huh. It was totally ignored.
Okay. So that's why we need movie critics.
Yeah, critics and also film researchers. I'm not saying those people in the avatar is not important because they are the ones who have made them their job to dig up those great works that are ignored somehow by the public and also by the award givers.
In China, I think starting from the opening up until now, I think before we didn't even have a modern movie industry. We made movies, definitely, mm-hmm. attempts. There were a few good pieces of works coming out, but that was not an industry. And now the movie industry is still in the building. It's not fully industrialized, a mature industry. So put movie critics in the whole picture. Mm-hmm. Where can they fit? What roles they should play, or are they important in the whole thing, in the whole movie industry?
The movie industry as we know it in China actually started from the new century, around 2000.
Mm-hmm.
There was almost a clear sign, which is Zhang Yimou's Hero. It was the first so-called...
Is it The Crouching Tiger?
No, The Crouching Tiger was a co-production.
Okay.
It was not a purely Chinese
mm-hmm.
movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there were great movies that were made before that, mm-hmm. especially during 1993 and 94. But as an industry, it started then, mm-hmm. especially the venues for film showing.
Cinemas.
Yeah, cinemas. In North America, they're called multiplexes. Multiplexes did not exist in the last century. They were started being built only in this century.
How was Chinese movies shown? Tell us. Before. A little history.
The most common venue is called an auditorium.
In the 70s, even earlier, when we were little.
There were two major forms. One is the auditorium. Almost any giant meeting hall could be converted to a movie theater just by hanging up a screen.
Not
right?
Just converted. Just it's, put the machine
yeah,
there, right?
Yeah, to put the machine there and, you know, it's benches and they were giant and they were probably, architecturally, they were probably more or less modeled on the Soviet style, right? But in the countryside, they were just shown in the open air. When it became dark, they set up the screen and people would sit on both sides of the screen.
Mm.
I was watching that kind of movie when I was in graduate school. So that was a very unique experience. And of course, people had a lot of fun. Many people, they didn't really care about the quality of the
movie.
It's
like BBC proms, right?
Yeah, it's the experience itself that really counted. Yeah. It was not the quality of the movie.
And the same movie can be played again and again.
Yeah, it's like during the 10 years, it was only like 24 movies in total. Yeah. And they were played again and again. People could recite every line backwards.
Okay.
And so it was very different. Mm-hmm. Unlike today, we have this plethora of movies what we don't know, and we love to complain about them, and we found great movies that we didn't know about. All those experience very much like similar to what people in Western countries are having started in this century. As for film criticism, in last century, it was more or less academic, either academic or almost non-existent, just academic. So their influence were very limited. Starting from this century with the influence of so-called market-oriented newspapers, those papers would carry reviews. They were not academic criticism. They were just reviews that were designed for the film-going market.
For newspaper readers.
Yeah, for newspaper readers. And those readers are mostly, of course, city slickers who had the income and also the time to go and enjoy the movie in an air-conditioned hall, specifically designed for showing movies, not for multi-purpose, for holding a meeting or doing a doubling of the theater, just for movies. So that was very new. But starting from like about 10 years ago with the popularity of the pad, the mobile device, things changed. That's when Douban was no longer an elitist movie lover's platform that became accessible to everyone. It's like, as long as you have seen a movie, you are the critic.
Is your writing style changed because of the development of the technology? I mean, iPad, a more portable sort of mobile.
I try
you
to...
Know, let me put it this way. In China, we don't really have movie critics as a trade or profession.
No.
Before, it was mostly academic research, like film teachers are teaching students, you know, why this movie is good, why, you know, this movie should be improved, or skills or whatever. But later, there isn't a trade or profession. It started from the turn of the century.
Yes.
And only 10 years ago, it has become a booming sort of industry. Tell me, after the internet, or let's say portable media, comes to this level, today's level, do you think you feel threatened?
Oh, I didn't feel threatened, but I feel like I
pressured.
Was being relegated to the sidelines, because before, you were one of a dozen or two dozen so-called professional critics who were invited by the influential print media platforms.
Everything.
And and now suddenly it's not like another two dozen people are competing with you, but 2,000, 20,000. And in the case of one movie, they said there were 1 million posts online. So you were just one out of 1 million. And it's very difficult to
make a ripple. Do you feel you're not needed?
I feel that I could easily have been drowned out.
Marginalized.
Yeah, marginalized and drowned out, because the cacophony or the noises out there, because quantity does not equal to quality, right? So if you have 1 million posts online, there are probably a few gems in there, but in terms of the ratio, it's not that high. It's not vetted by editors. Because for the print media and for television, it's vetted. They choose out of so many different critics which voice I want to give to, right?
Let's forget about the good old times, even for a movie critic or a journalist like me. You know, in the good old days, we say the media or the institution, the radio station would wait for 2 days for you to finish an article and send them back by telegraph, because nobody else has this story, right?
Now it has narrowed down to 2 hours.
Now, minutes later, if you are late, you're slow, okay?
Yeah.
So that was the good old days, same to you and me, our jobs. We're being marginalized. But what shall we do? Do you consider quitting, or do you think you're going to stick to? Because if we do not try hard enough, we are going to become
the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs or the lost gemstones we talked about. There are movies become forgotten. But I think you and me both are confident about our writing.
Yes.
We are content provider, creative content writing, right? We know our stuff is good, but they are not being noticed and they are being forgotten. What to do?
I was among the first batch invited by CNS Weibo when they first tested Weibo. And it took me like 3 to 5 years to really have a grasp of the art of expressing everything in 140 characters.
Yeah. 140 words.
So difficult. Only when...
It's a skill.
It's a skill. And I thought, oh, I treat it as Tang Dynasty poem. It's like instead of writing a novel, now you are writing a poem, then it makes sense. And it's not like breaking a 2,000-word piece into 5 different parts. It's not like that. You have to write for that length. It's like the art of the soundbite.
Yes, in the States,
all the politicians, they have to learn the sound of the soundbite. If you talk to a reporter, television reporter, for 5 minutes, much of it is wasted. Yes, they are only going to show like 20 seconds, right?
Yeah.
So you have to learn the 20 seconds. And the same thing here. And just after I have learned to express, to learn this specific art skill, then suddenly comes out the Chinese version of TikTok, Douyin, the visual form, which is even more foreign to me.
I think it's an intruder. I think,
but
really,
I mean, young people really love it. And then I thought, I have to split myself. I can write the text and I have to hire someone younger, better looking to do the reading because your face doesn't really register.
Look that.
With the people, the young people.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the first impression counts. It's the beauty of the face will catch them, and then they will spend, I will spend like half a minute to listen to him or her. It's a different world now, and it's always hard for people like us to accept reality. And you really think hard, do I want to change to that? And am I able to make that switch? It's not just like your willingness. I've seen a lot of people who are willing to make the switch, but who look so clumsy that they'd better just stay on their own path.
What is your prospect as a movie critic in the future? I mean, the internet or AI is coming, you know. I know that announcers like us, broadcasters, can be replaced by an AI, a robot.
A host will not be easily replaced.
Yes, and a movie critic not. But then another thing is that it's not about creative ideas. I know you're creative. I have read a lot of your articles. I really appreciate that. But these articles and your ideas need a battalion of marketing people to spread them, to be made accessible to everybody. But we don't have this backup. Right. Do you think you still have a position? And do you think you still are of value to the movie industry? And then, therefore, you're going to stick to it?
I'm still making a living from this. I actually have downgraded myself drastically over the past decade in terms of quantity. I used to write a lot. I could produce like 100 reviews a year, 100 in Chinese and 100 in English. But nowadays, like I would probably turn out 10 pieces in a year.
But you cannot make a living out of it.
I do a lot of things like, you know, I moderate forums, do a lot of events. And also, I make money from consulting for film companies. Whether they take my advice or not is another thing, but I offer their advice and I'm paid. And I'm automatically taken off the list of qualification for publicly talking about this picture. Because I...
You contributed to...
Yeah, I contributed to that. Mm-hmm, and, whether it come out good or bad, it doesn't have anything to do with me. But I feel that I should not talk about it. Should not write about it when it opens and it's released to the public. But I do, every year, a lot of projects, PPTs or film scripts, I have to read and to write my 2 cents on them. Like, you know, to whether it can be improved or not. And so I see tons and tons of projects in the making. Some of them even came out of the so-called pipeline and become movies. I want to contribute to the film industry, not just the Chinese industry, but you know, all over the world, by offering what I have, which is a multiple viewpoints, multiple perspectives in seeing things. So if you offer something that can be valued by your target audience, then you have a value.
3 years ago, Raymond challenged himself by hosting a talk show about trending topics in the global film industry on China Central Television's movie channel. His fresh and humorous style soon attracted a large audience. Raymond said it was not easy for him to engage with an audience in front of a camera, as he'd gotten used to reaching them through his writing. But he took it as a valuable learning experience that's helped him to hone his skills. And that's the end of our show. I'm Man Ling. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to visit chinaplus.cri.cn and look for Encounters, where you will find other episodes of the show, along with Man Ling's journals about our interviews.